I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. If you're a regular listener to Radio Times, you know that I love movies. In fact, before the pandemic, my husband and I would go to a movie theater every week, sometimes twice, and always feel that sense of anticipation when the lights dimmed and the screen lit up. And on Radio Times, I would cap off the end of the year with a program highlighting the best and sometimes the worst in cinema. Last year, we had to pull the plug on our annual movie show because everything was shut down. Now, the vaccine has helped to reopen movie theaters, although they are struggling to fill seats. Luckily, it's possible to watch movies from home, although for me, it's not the same experience. I like movie watching to be a communal experience. That said, there were some terrific films this year and some standout performances, so our annual movie show is back. And our guests are Cameron Austin Collins. He's Rolling Stone Magazine's film critic. He also constructs crossword puzzles for New York Magazine. And Cameron Austin Collins, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. And here with us in our Philadelphia studios is Neil Oxman, who has been a regular guest on our movie show. He saw 110 movies this year in movie theaters. He's also a political consultant, president, and co-founder of the Campaign Group. And Neil Oxman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning, Marty.
Let me begin with a question just about the fate, I guess, of movie theaters. And Cam, if I could begin with you, and I almost hate to begin a conversation about movies talking about COVID and the pandemic, but nonetheless, here we are. Do you think movie theaters are going to survive this pandemic, Cam?
Well, gosh, before Omicron, I felt one way, and now I feel maybe a little bit dimmer, but I think yes, because I think many people feel the same way as you. I think a lot of us prefer the communal experience. We also admittedly like the convenience of getting to watch Dune at home, but it's not the same as seeing it in the theater, I think. And I think for that kind of film in particular,
well, indeed,
theaters will survive.
Yeah, because it's a big screen film. I know for you, Neil, I mean, you are a purist. You go to the movies and you go to movie theaters.
Right. Well, I used to average about 185 movies a year, which is what I saw in 2 years because in 2020, many theaters were closed for a long time. But, certainly Batman, which is in less than 2 weeks, has grossed $1 billion worldwide. Whoa. The James Bond movie did almost $800 million worldwide. So there are – in the big movies clearly have an audience where people want to see them in the big theaters. What scares me is that the art house movies around the country, which, as a friend of mine always says, are vanity projects for directors and actors, but, always found a way to make a few million dollars in theaters and then with streaming and other stuff could break even. I'm not sure what kind of future they're going to have. I mean, because when you go to the art houses I've done, not only here but in other cities, I mean, they are empty. They are really empty. And so I don't know whether or not, how they're going to survive. Are they just going to go to streaming? Now, I mean, I think the new paradigm is that the Amazon and the Netflix, what they do is they make these movies and they show them in the theater for 2 or 3 weeks for Academy Award purposes. And then they disappear. I mean, then they're streaming. Monday I saw a George Clooney-directed movie with Ben Affleck called The Tender Bar in a screen where 198 seats were, and I was alone.
And you were the only person
in
the theater.
It was an Amazon movie, and it was alone. I don't know how many screens it's out in the country, but, that's indicative of what's going on. Now, you can still go right now to, any multiplex and see Spider-Man, and there'll be a lot of people there.
Sure. Well, to you, Cam, do you share Neil's concern about sort of art house or the sort of independent movie theaters that really rely on some of these small budget films and rely on a loyal group of people that are willing to see these kinds of films?
What I'll say is, will it save them? I don't know. But what started happening early in the pandemic was the very quick creation and pretty clever and I think dynamic use of virtual cinemas, which again, for those of us who like to see things in theaters, doesn't help. But for the art house theaters that are relying on films even smaller than like the Tender Bar, smaller than your George Clooney, Ben Affleck product, they're finding ways to still get the films out there. I don't know what the revenue has really been like because this is all still so new, but it is a sign that art houses are trying their hardest, you know,
they are.
To adapt for particularly the most vulnerable films. But then, yes, it is good that, you know, we have a Netflix that can give us The Power of the Dog or Passing or Amazon to give us Tender Bar or whatever else, just, you know, for that level of kind of mid-tier movie. And then for the smallest stuff, we do have to kind of keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, and hope it all survives, but it's a changing world. Well, let's talk about the movies of 2021. And I said, I'll start with you, Cameron, but I said in my intro, I thought it was a really good year for movies. Maybe not, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, but certainly the ones I saw, I thought were terrific. What was a couple of good movies you saw, Cam?
Well, something that come top of mind, just to mention a couple that I just mentioned, The Power of the Dog by Jane Campion. Kind of lovely to see her back in theaters, quote unquote. No, it got into theaters. I won't pretend that it didn't, but it's a Netflix film. I also liked West Side Story. I'm one of the people who liked the crazy nunsploitation movie Benedetta.
I saw that on your list. Yeah, I hear you.
Just not for everyone, but for those of us who explore, it's kind of out there. And then, yeah, I think there were a good number of... I mean, we have to remember that a lot of things didn't get released last year and got pushed to this year. Right. So even something like The French Dispatch... is getting got released later than it was supposed to, so that counts as this year. I think it's been a good year.
Oh well, that's
because
interesting.
It's kind of 2 years worth of films in some ways.
I do want to play a scene from The Power of the Dog, but Neil, what are some of the films on your top list?
Well, I like this film called Nobody with Bob Odenkirk, which is sort of a revenge movie where. Completely out of character the way you think of Bob Odenkirk. No one saw it because it came out in March. A movie called The Dry, which Australian movie with Eric Bana, detective movie, The same thing. It was out early. Summer of Love, Roadrunner, which was a terrific documentary about Anthony Bourdain, which might be my favorite documentary of the year. There's a great Western called Old Henry with Tim Blake Nelson that is worth trying to find. I love The French Dispatch, which, of course, is Wes Anderson's homage to The New Yorker. It's interesting. All my younger friends who like Wes Anderson movies think it's their least favorite because they're not New Yorker readers. But if you're a New Yorker reader, it's like listening to an oral version of The New Yorker. Belfast, of course. My favorite movie of the year was probably Come On, Come On, the Joaquin Phoenix movie with Gabby Hoffman and a kid actor, Woody Norman, and it might be the best kid acting I've seen almost ever. Don't Look Up, of course, Tick, Tick, Boom. And, when I put my list together and sent it to you, I did 10, but I saw Licorice Pizza afterwards, and it's really fun. That's Paul Thomas Anderson. There were two Andersons on the list this year.
I always get them confused.
And so that rounds out my top 10 list.
Well, I do want to play The Power of the Dog, but I'll just toss out what's on my list in no particular order. Summer of Soul, Power of the Dog, The Green Knight, Come On, Come On, Belfast, Dune, West Side Story, The French Dispatch, Roadrunner that you mentioned, King Richard, and I saw last night The Tragedy of Macbeth, and I'm still sort of recovering from the absolute gorgeous beautiful film that is. But let me play a scene from Power of the Dog. This is a Western written and directed by Jane Campion. It stars Benedict Cumberbatch as a tortured and cruel rancher. He torments his sister-in-law. She's played by Kirsten Dunst, and it also stars Jesse Plemons and Jody Smith McPhee. In this scene, he is taunting his sister-in-law about her piano playing.
I've heard that you're brilliant.
You're going to want to keep your distance and just off the horse. Anyhow, so you don't want conversation. You've been listening to the piano and dancing, I guess. You dance? You didn't play? Sure did practice a terrible lot. See, you wouldn't think there's much difference between a cinema pit and a dinner party.
Where have you been, Phil? I could hardly eat worrying about you.
I didn't get washed up, so I didn't come.
Just run, grab you a blanket for the ride.
Well, if you've seen that film, you know how frightening that scene is. Cameron, it's a gorgeous film, and it's a film that we don't want to give too much away on because there are a lot of secrets, a lot of hidden stories, sort of hidden in plain sight. And it's a kind of a prey-predator game that Jane Campion's got going here. But any thoughts you want to add?
Well, can I just say, I mean, that was a good scene to pick because I will spoil one thing for people, which is that despite the fact that Benedict Cumberbatch's character pronounces it Panano, this is a character that we find out earlier in that scene went to Yale.
Right, that's true.
And, is very much a cowboy. It's a very interesting film, right? It's Jane Campion who knows how to kind of dredge up the strangeness of these interactions and the threateningness of these interactions. And it's based on a really interesting novel that I think people should check out that it was only recently kind of recuperated by Thomas Savage from, I think, 1967, one of those classic, not acknowledged much during his lifetime, then the right publisher finds him way after the fact, and then Jane Campion makes a movie. But I would definitely check it out. My mom was very creeped out by everyone in the movie, not just the bad people.
You go, Mom.
She called me and said, "That Jesse Plemons." I was like, he wasn't playing the bad guy necessarily. But yeah, great film.
Yeah, great film. Anything you want to add to that? Yeah?
Evidently Benedict Cumberbatch did a Daniel Day-Lewis and never got out of character even for the whole time, even off, when he wasn't filming. So, which is kind of weird when you see him now in Spider-Man and he's, he's doing it totally ironically. But you're not whistling show tunes when you leave the movie, but it's a beautifully shot movie. It takes place in supposedly 1925. When there were still people doing cattle drives
in Montana,
and it's although it was filmed in New Zealand, but it really is a beautiful movie, and but it's an intense 2 hours.
Indeed. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a very short break and get back to our conversation. It's our annual movie show on Radio Times, and we're looking back and talking about some of the movies that we enjoyed in 2021. And as always on the show, we want to hear from you. You could have gone to the theaters, or frankly, you could watch it at home. We don't care. We just want to get your suggestions. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. And we're talking with Cameron Austin Collins. He is the film critic for Rolling Stone magazine. He constructs crossword puzzles for The New Yorker. And here with us in our Philadelphia studios, Neil Oxman. He's a movie goer here in Philadelphia, also a political consultant, president, and co-founder of the Campaign Group. Much more after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to bring up some folks.
I was nervous. We were so excited about being there.
We join our hands and say prayers before we went on stage.
Gladys Knight!
Now, when I stepped on stage, I was totally, totally taken aback because I didn't expect a crowd like that.
And the Pips!
I bet you're wondering how I do. Baby, baby, that's playing to make me blue. But some other girl you knew before. Surprise, I must say, when I found out yesterday, don't you know that I heard it through the grapevine?
Well,
Not much longer would you be mine.
Questlove's documentary about the 1969 Harlem Cultural Festival, the Summer of Soul. And that's a scene with Gladys Knight and the Pips when they take the stage singing that anthem from that year. I heard it through the grapevine. Talking about movies with our guests Neil Oxman and Cameron Austin Collins. Cameron, do you want just a quick comment about Questlove's documentary?
Yeah, it's good fun, isn't it?
I mean,
it reminds me quite a bit of, I don't know if either of you a couple years ago caught the finally the release of the Aretha Franklin Amazing Grace documentary that was filmed, you know, the recording of her classic album, but just another example of archival footage being put to incredible use and just this look into the past of music at these great, great performers. In this case, what Questlove has is, you know, the present day commentary from people like Gladys Knight that really kind of sets you up for something. But this footage from the Harlem Cultural Festival, which I don't think many people really know very much about.
No.
I've had friends kind of mention that their parents kind of had their memories of it reawakened by the movie, but they'd forgotten that it happened. So I'm glad that this movie exists because it's beautiful footage and wonderful commentary, but also just this happened.
Yeah.
And it's just wonderful to kind of be reminded of that.
It's great music. Just quickly, Neil, if you don't mind.
When you think of 69, you think of Woodstock.
Of course.
And of course, this footage was essentially, you know, hidden for 50 years, and Questlove found it and took about a year and a half to put this together, and it was a really good movie. Besides culturally, and you know, it's just a good music movie.
Absolutely, with the best music out there, certainly at that time. Let me play another clip, and this is from the film Belfast. It's an autobiographical coming-of-age comedy drama. It's written and directed by Kenneth Branagh, and it's about growing up in Belfast, Northern Ireland, during the Troubles. In this scene, Buddy, who's a 9-year-old, played by Jude Hill, he's talking with his grandparents, played by Kieran Hines and Judy Dench, Pop and Granny, about a school project about the moon, and I should add that Buddy has a crush on a girl in his classroom. Let's give it a listen.
When is your next chance?
We have to do a project about the moon landing.
Well, did those boys not come back from that?
They did. Now we have to cut things out of the papers and explain how they got there.
If they did get there, they did get to the moon. It's not what it says here. God doesn't like it.
And I watched every night too that they were up there. And how did I never see Mike Collins in the mothership doing his orbit? Surely you would have seen the shape of Columbus against the light of the moon.
No, that's because mostly he was on the dark side.
Exactly, it's the side that Lucifer hangs his shillelagh.
No, he was on the dark side of the moon most of the time where we couldn't see him. You know, when he was doing his orbit, and then maybe, you know, just before he was due to come around the corner, you had to go in for your tea.
If I could come up with something smart about that, maybe I could stay up at the top desk and wait till she gets back there.
Well, you could say the moon's made of green cheese and dropped down a place.
Or you could do the project together, you and a young lady. You get the same marks and maybe end up on the same seat together.
But how do you even talk to her?
How do you handle a woman? There's a way, said the wise old man. A way known by every woman since the whole rigmarole.
Yes, old rigmarole with you, mister.
It's such a sweet scene. It's just wonderful to see Buddy's relationship with his grandparents, who lived just, you know, just across the way. Neil, you want to comment
say
on
another,
that?
Another wonderful performance by a child actor, this kid, Jude Hill. It was a really great ensemble performance. And the interesting thing is that Kenneth Branagh shot it in black and white. But it doesn't take away from the beauty of the movie. And it's also sort of not, you know, about it. I mean, it's at the time of the Troubles in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
But I've told friends of mine, don't be afraid to take their kids, because it's you know, I don't mean 5-year-olds, but I'm talking about kids 10, 12 years old. I think they can see it and really understand it.
What are you hearing that, Cam? Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I'm glad that you chose a clip from in particular, Judy Dench and Kieran Hines, because they, for me, really, I mean, Judy Dench, I think, gets the real knockout punch at the end of the film, just the great, great line reading and just something in her eyes that just breaks your heart. These are actually two of my favorite performances of the year, and I haven't really heard them spoken about in terms of awards races in that way, which surprises me because they were the anchor emotionally and everything. I just think it's quite beautiful work from them. And yeah, great Chop performance. Still, for me, no match for my new son, Woody Norman, I have to say. I'm going to have to adopt him.
Well, I think you'll have to stand in line for that, Cameron. Well, you know, we've mentioned children several times. So there's got Woody Norman in Come On, Come On. We just heard Jude Hill in Buddy. There's a little boy in The French Dispatch, Gabriel Ryan. There's Venus and Serena Williams in King Richard, Sunia Sidney, and Demi Singleton.
You're a tennis player. You know
I am
this.
A tennis player.
The King Richard movie with Philadelphia's Will Smith. About the family, and mostly about how we raise these kids. The amazing thing about the two girls who were picked to play Venus and Serena Williams, they did not play tennis before they got cast in this movie. They didn't go look for tennis players. They looked for actresses, and they taught them how to play tennis. Yeah. And that's one of the most amazing things I've seen in movies all year, because usually – when you see people trying to play sports who really can't play sports, they can't fake it. These girls really became tennis players.
Well, you see them hit the ball as opposed to sort of a camera looking at their feet or something like that,
exactly.
Which is a sort of look away. Well, speaking of King Richard, let me play a clip from the film. This is by Ronaldo Marcus Green, written by Zach Balin, and stars Will Smith, Philadelphia's own Will Smith, as Richard Williams. He's the father and, of course, coach to tennis stars Venus and Serena Williams, played by Sunia Sidney and Demi Singleton. The mom, Brandy Williams, is played, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing her name correctly, Ingenue Ellis. And in this scene, Richard Williams is driving through a wealthy neighborhood on the way to tennis practice.
Where are we practicing today, Daddy?
Yeah, where are we practicing? Yeah.
Well, we're going someplace special today.
These houses are huge.
Yes, that one looks like a castle.
Wrap my head around.
You all like these houses?
Yes.
Well, that one looks like a White House.
Which one? Which one you like? What's your favorite?
I like that one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one's nice. If that was my house, I'd put a pool in the front and a slide on the roof.
We'll put your pool in the front.
We have a big pool party. Everybody's going to want to come to my house.
Oh, you just gonna be the crazy lady on the block.
Oh, I'm gonna be the coolest person on the block.
That one has a tennis court.
Oh, that's the one then. That's the one. You gonna have any one of these houses you want. Beverly Hills, Hollywood Hills, any of these old hills. Because you got a plan and you're gonna stick to it.
Another great scene with, a dad talking to his daughters. Kim, I thought Will Smith was absolutely terrific in this movie.
Yeah, I really like, I mean, I'm endeared to Will in the first place, but yes, I quite like him in this. And I think that Ingenue Ellis, who plays his wife, Brandy, is really also crucial because part of the story is it's not just Venus and Serena. It's a whole gaggle of daughters who are being raised in Compton. And also, their mother was their co-coach in so many ways. She's really responsible for that work. And so it's called King Richard, and it is about Venus and Serena, but it is really about the entire family dynamic, and it really works on that level. And I also just love the supporting cast. John Bernthal, etc. Just all around, I think.
Yeah, if you're a sports
wonderful
fan,
terms from people you know.
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
If you're a sports fan, you'll really like this movie. I mean, it's a really good tennis movie, because Richard Williams was really criticized about the way he introduced his daughters to tennis. It reminds me something of the way Tiger Woods' dad raised him. I mean, he really was the guy who called the shots for a long time, and Tiger turned out pretty well in terms of how he could – how he's done in the golf game. And obviously you can't talk. No. I mean, these two women are two of the greatest 15 women tennis players of all time. But it's worth seeing if you're a sports fan and you're a tennis fan. It's a really good movie to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a great story. Let me read some comments from Sally. My first movie in a theater after COVID was Annette. I loved it. Marion Cotillard and Adam Driver were fabulous. Am I the only one that liked it? She asks. Here's a tweet from Tim. I saw Dune in the theater with my son and felt like we were experiencing the beginning of something revolutionary. I love the pacing, cinematography, sound, and score. I love Villeneuve, and I can't wait for part two. Let me read two more. Comment from Regina. We enjoyed the new Ghostbusters movie and Dune, which was the first thing I've seen in a theater since COVID. A Facebook comment from Lisa. Not ready to go back into the movie theater, into the movies just yet. We tried going, to a concert earlier this year wearing masks, proof of vax required for entry, but I was still uncomfortable. So I think a nice kind of mix of responses from our audience. Let me just make sure you can join our conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499, and tell us about some of the movies that you have enjoyed this year. And again, talking with Neil Oxman and Cameron Austin Collins about the movies of 2021. Let me toss out another film that we picked. This is Wes Anderson's movie about an American newspaper, The French Dispatch, and it's based in a French city. And here's a scene with Timothée Chalamet, who I think is in every movie I saw this year, who plays Zeffirelli, and Frances McDormand, who also is in every movie I think I've seen this year, plays Lucinda Kremitz. And this is Wes Anderson's homage to journalism and The New Yorker. And Chalamet, I should say, is in the bathtub. He's got a manuscript and she's the editor.
What are you writing?
Our manifesto. I told them not to invite Paul, by the way. Maybe you're sad, but you don't seem lonely to me.
Exactly.
I saw you at the protest on top of a bookcase taking notes. Is there a story in us for the people of Kansas?
Maybe.
Then you should study our resolutions. Or anyway, will you proofread it? My parents think you're a good writer.
Give it to me. It's a little damp.
Physically or metaphorically?
Both, based on the cover and the first four sentences.
Don't criticize my manifesto.
Oh, you don't want remarks?
I don't need remarks, do I? I only asked you to proofread it because I thought you'd be even more impressed by how good it already is.
Let's start with the typos.
Cameron, you want to weigh in on that as someone who constructs crossword puzzles for The New Yorker?
Well, I have to say, I hear younger fans of Anderson maybe not being as into it, but I think this is one of his more creative, exciting movies because it is just such a... I mean, everything that he does is such a kind of playful treasure trove of things, but this is an omnibus movie. It's a film that plays out like the last issue of a magazine, and in the scene that we heard from, I mean, you have Frances McDormand playing a kind of Mavis Gallant-like character and her coverage of May 68 and the Young Revolutionaries, but you also have Jeffrey Wright playing a kind of combination of A.J. Liebling and James Baldwin, and it's unexpected, even for Wes Anderson, for me. And I hope that people kind of warm up to it. This is one that I did see in the theater multiple times, and I think it benefits actually from that because he uses the screen, the frame, to do so much. I mean, tableau vivants and just everything that he knows how to do, he just throws it into this movie, and I think it works.
I want to squeeze one more film in.
The credits at the end, he credits all these great New Yorker writers, but there are at least 25 actors that you know who are in this movie, including some people who have a one-shot cameo. I think Bill Murray plays the editor of this newspaper magazine. He's been in almost every Wes Anderson movie. I mean, he's terrific. But what I love was the artwork because he did all these New Yorker covers. They were not New York, the French Dispatch covers that look like great New Yorker covers. And it's really worth, if you're a New Yorker fan, you've got to see this movie.
Let me squeeze in another film before we have to get to our break. And this is a film directed by Rebecca Hall, based on a 1929 Nella Larsen book about two light-skinned black women who were childhood friends who reunite as adults. It's called Passing. Irene is played by Tessa Thompson. She learns that her friend Claire, Ruth Negga, is, quote, passing as white and is married to a racist, wealthy white man, John, played in the scene by Alexander Skarsgård.
Do you hear what John called me, Reedy?
Oh, Claire, please.
No, go on. Tell her why.
Oh, it's silly. when we were first married, this woman was as white as a lily. But as the years go by, she seems to be getting darker and darker. So I told her, if you don't look out, you'll wake up one morning and find that you've turned into a nigger. Yeah, she's been nig ever since.
That's good.
Wow, Cameron, tell us about that scene. Ooh. Yeah, who is right?
Chose one of the white knuckle scenes.
Exactly. Let's. We just went there, right? Exactly.
Oh. Yeah, you did. No, I mean that is one of the crucial, kind of one of the crucial scenes because I mean, you know. Look, we're talking about two black women who are in that moment passing as white. One of whom is married to a white man. And one of the things that's in the subtext of the scene is the danger of having a child with a white man when you don't know what the complexion of the child is going to be. So that laughter that you hear at the end is also Tessa Thompson. She's kind of laughing at the ridiculousness, the farce, the danger of it. But she also... It's just like opening the window in a very stuffy room, just having to let a little bit of some other energy into the room because it is so tense. It is so tense to be like a black woman hearing a white man say these things about who you know to be a black woman, and he doesn't know that either of you are black, and what he's describing is deeply offensive, but also just highlighting the utter danger of potentially of what happens. I think it's a really wonderful film and a great, great novel that I hope people kind of rediscover.
Well, let's take that short break and we'll get back to our conversation talking about the movies of 2021 with Cameron Austin Collins. He's Rolling Stone magazine's film critic. As I mentioned earlier, he also writes, constructs crossword puzzles for the New Yorker magazine. Sorry about that. Neil Oxman is with us here in our Philadelphia studios. He saw 110 movies this year in movie theaters. He's also a political consultant, president, and co-founder of the Campaign Group. Many more movies to talk about after this very short break. We do want to hear from you, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Call us 1-888-477-9499.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Tonight, it all began tonight. I saw you on the world when I
a miracle would happen. I know now I was right. For here you are, and what was just a world is a star.
And of course, the song Tonight, sung by Rachel Zegler, is Maria Ansel Elgort as Tony and Steven Spielberg's remake of West Side Story. Neil, what did you think?
I was going to say, it's interesting that there have been three big Broadway shows, movies released this year. In the Heights, right. Lin-Manuel Miranda's first play, Evan Hansen, and West Side Story, none of whom have done very well at the box office. In fact, I think West Side Story, which supposedly cost $100 million, it's directed by Steven Spielberg, who does not fail very often at the movies, and obviously one of the greatest, you know, icons in the history of Broadway, and everybody knows every song from West Side Story.
You might be dating yourself, Neil, there. I mean, I do.
Yeah, well,
I'm old enough to remember seeing as a little
anyway,
girl.
Yes. You know, but a lot of those songs are now part of the Great American Songbook. Mm-hmm. And West Side Story has only made $47 million worldwide, and the other two made far less than that. And part of it is that so far, people returning to movies seem to be men, 25 to 50, And these movies are largely appeal to women. I mean, not largely, but, you know, when I saw West Side Story, there were way more females than males in the audience. So there were only about 15 people there. But the question is, now, you know, what does that say? I mean, just to digress for 1 second, this will be 2 years almost that people have stopped going to the movies. I mean, in 2019, the American box office was over $11 billion. Last year was
$2 billion.
Last year was $2 billion. This year is $4 billion. Right. And if after 2 years, I mean, it's like, okay, are we ever, I mean, except for the Spider-Mans and a few things, is this something that will ever return? I mean, David Geffen, who knows a lot about show business, says that in 5, 10, 15 years, as you said in a podcast recently, quote, he thinks 90% of theaters will be gone.
Yeah. Cameron, from your perspective, was West Side Story going to, you know, ignite the theater stage? I mean, it has not done that well. And maybe are movies about musicals somehow passé, or are we just in this sort of weird trough?
Well, it's funny because, you know, after La La Land, I think people, which was a huge, huge international success, I think that people thought that, you know, musicals were coming back. I think that's why so many have been made, because another one that wasn't really, it was a Netflix film, but Tick, Tick, Boom, the Jonathan Larson recovered early musical starring Andrew Garfield was another one. And we can't really rely on box office to measure its kind of impact. But yeah, I mean, Neil's pointing out something really urgent here, because In the Heights and West Side Story came out at separate points in the year, separate points in the pandemic, separate points in vaccines, and neither really did very well. And West Side Story, I expected to do a bit better than it did. On the other hand, I think five years is fast. I think I'm just having flashbacks to when Kindles were supposed to kill books, and they didn't in the way that it wasn't quite as fast as I think people thought it was. I think that people will swing back around, but I think that theaters are going to have to find ways to make it special. And yeah, it is absolutely true that there is a certain demographic that is having the time of their lives in theaters, because I saw those Spider-Man lines, and I thought that I was walking past COVID testing center line.
It was just as long, right?
And it was Spider-Man.
Right, or the one for the test. Yeah, exactly. Here's an email from Phyllis. She said, I just saw At Home, Tick, Tick, Boom the other night, directed by Lin-Manuel Miranda. It's amazing, constant energy. Andrew Garfield's performance is riveting, draws you in, stays with you for days. Speaking of which, let's play a scene from Tick, Tick, Boom. And this is Andrew Garfield, Vanessa Hudgens, and Joshua Henry singing Louder Than Words.
I do we stay with lovers who we know down deep just are right? Why would we rather put ourselves through hell than sleep alone at night?
Why do we follow leaders who never lead?
Why does it take a catastrophe to start?
Again, a song from Tick, Tick, Boom. Well, I'm going to make a giant leap here. This is a scene from a documentary called Procession. And, Cam, this was on your list. This is a documentary by Robert Festinger, and it follows six men, all survivors of child sexual assault by Catholic priests and clergy, who come together to make films about their trauma. And, actually, this is from the movie trailer. Let's give it a quick listen.
I don't think I've been inside this church in more than 30 years.
When you look at the windows, you can never think something bad might happen here.
Trauma therapy is the intentional use of role play to achieve a therapeutic goal.
We're trying to walk through each other's memories and the things that haunt us the most. Each survivor is writing their own script.
I'm a New York City contractor. I can chew the balls of a union electrician, but I can't talk about what happened to you when I'm 13.
I have so much anger and hatred, I can't even put it into words.
We have over 230 priests that we know of that have been sexually abusive in this area.
Catholic Church says, tell your mother we're sorry. You tell my mother you're sorry because she still believes in you.
Wow, Cameron, can you expand on that clip?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one to describe because really what you're watching is the making of several short films by the survivors of Catholic priest abuse in from the Kansas City Diocese over a number of years. And what they're doing, I think you heard in the clip someone refer to kind of drama therapy, but they're writing scripts. They're performing in each other's films. Some of them play the priests. Some of them play, you know, or they find kind of surrogate younger actor for to play younger versions of themselves. Wow. But really, it's about this collective reparative work of art making. You know, it's a documentary that's putting its finger on how we can use art to heal. And I mean, they go to the original locations at times. They disclose so much of themselves. Just by the end of the film, I feel like I've learned so much more about these men than I would have if it had just been a straightforward talking head documentary about the Kansas City Diocese, just by having them write scripts about their experiences and make choices as filmmakers. That's why the film at the beginning credits them as co-directors, basically.
Wow. That sounds...
It's quite something. And yeah, it's on Netflix. And please see it.
I hear you. Neil, anything you want to add to that?
I did not see it.
You did not see it.
Yeah.
You did see Look Up, though, right?
Don't Look Up? Yes,
Don't
I
Look
did.
Up, rather,
yes,
I should
yes,
say.
Well, because Adam McKay, who's here from Philly, you know, is one of my favorite directors. A couple years ago, The Big Short was my favorite movie of the year. And this is his spoof of everything.
Which is a perfect setup for us. This is a scene from Adam McKay's film, Don't Look Up. It's about an astronomy grad student, played by Jennifer Lawrence, her professor, played by Leonardo DiCaprio. And they discover that a comet orbiting within the solar system is going to collide with the Earth, and no one seems to care. Here they are trying to convince the president, who's played by Meryl Streep, and her chief of staff, played by Jonah Hill.
So how certain is this? I heard there's an asteroid or a comet or something that you don't like the looks of. Tell me about it. You got 20 minutes.
20 minutes?
Go.
A comet between 5 to 10 kilometers across that we estimate came from the Oort cloud. And using Gauss's method of orbital determination and the average astrometric uncertainty of 0.04.
Whoa. The hell is
so
what?
Bored. Just tell us what it is. Seriously, stop.
What Dr. Mindy is trying to say is that there's a comet headed directly towards Earth.
And then what happens? Like a tidal wave?
It will be far more catastrophic. There will be mile-high tsunamis.
So how certain is this?
There's 100% certainty of impact.
Please, don't say 100%.
Can we just call it a potentially significant event?
But it isn't potentially going to happen.
99.78% to be exact.
Oh, great. Okay, so it's not 100%.
Call it 70% and let's move on.
But it's not even close to 70%.
Let's just use like 60% as a working number.
Okay.
Neil, go ahead.
Having done politics for my entire
life. I was
going to
say, right up your alley there, right?
It is absolutely what goes on. But first of all, this is Leo DiCaprio like you've never seen him, you know, in the first probably third of the movie. And I think Adam McKay's direction to everybody was more, bigger, you know. Because everybody's kind of – almost everybody, with a few exceptions, is over the top in a great way in the movie. It is really – it's fun. It's a little too long. It's probably like a lot of movies today. They're a half hour too long. But and the people who are being made fun of in this movie, when they see it, I'm not sure they're going to understand they're being made fun of.
Right.
You know, because
such self-awareness,
right? The name of the movie comes from these buttons they made, Don't Look Up, meaning they're trying to tell you this isn't really happening. And finally somebody looks up and they see this comment and they say they're lying to us. But it's really a fun 2 hours, 2+ hours in the theaters, if it's still in theaters.
If it's still in
theaters.
Because
it started streaming, I think, the day before Christmas.
Let me play one. I'm looking at the clock here. Yeah, Cameron, do you want to add just something quickly? Because I want to squeeze another film in.
I would only say that everyone who wasn't in French Dispatch was in this movie.
Yes.
So Meryl wasn't in French Dispatch, but she's here. Leo is here. Ariana Grande is here. So, if you don't want French Dispatch, everyone that you want to see is in this one.
That's so perfect. Let me play a scene from Nobody. And, Neil, I know this was on your list. It's directed by Ilya Naishuller. I hope I'm saying his name correctly. It's about a mild-mannered family man named Hutch, played by Bob Odenkirk, who fails to defend himself or his family in home burglary, and he seeks revenge, leading him into a war with a Russian crime boss. Let's give it a clip.
Now, on the one hand, there's a long-dormant piece of me, now awake, that wants so very badly to play this out. The other, more reasonable piece of me, what's left of it, would like to end our little tete-a-tete right now. What's done is done. After all, we can both rebuild, right?
Right. Wait. Rebuild?
I burned it. All of it.
What all?
Everything you have. Had. Everything you had.
My art?
Shock! You should have seen it go up. It was something. I mean, this doesn't make us even. Because after all, you came to my house, which you know you don't f***ing do.
Nothing like a revenge film right now.
If this movie came out 6 months later because of its audience, it would have made a lot of money and been talked about and been really seen.
Yeah.
This is Bob Odenkirk. This is not Bob Odenkirk in Better Call Saul or Breaking Bad. This is and Christopher Lloyd is in this, as he's also in The Tender Bar. And I don't want to say anything else to spoil it because it shouldn't be spoiled, but it's streaming now on however many platforms it's streaming on, God. But if you want to watch it on television, you can watch this movie on television. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're watching TV, but I'm glad I saw it in the theater. It was another one this year where I was alone in the theater when I saw it on March 26th. It's sad that it didn't come out later.
Well, we're going to end things with some of the music from Dune. And I wonder, Cameron, I know that you were a little disappointed in Dune, as I understand it.
Well, I'm waiting for Dune 2. I'm waiting for the full story because I think we're almost there. But I need the second half.
It's better than the first one.
Yeah, I stayed awake. I stayed awake in this one, which I did not stay awake in the one of what 30 years ago.
Yes, yeah. Which was one of the great Hollywood bombs of all time.
And Cameron, just because we're going to be listening to music, can you say something about just the music in Dune?
Well, this is a Hans Zimmer product, so it's overwhelming in the way that it should be. I mean, I think it matches the scope of what you see on screen. So I really hope that people did get to see this one in theaters. I really do.
Well, we do have to leave things there. My thanks to – we got through all these films, which I'm just absolutely shocked by, but very pleased by as well. Cameron, Austin Collins, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you. This is fun.
Very fun for us as well, and he is Rolling Stone magazine film critic, and he also constructs crossword puzzles for The New Yorker magazine. Neil Oxman, thank you, as always, for talking about movies with us on Radio Times
Marty.
And he's a political consultant here in Philadelphia, president and co-founder of the Campaign Group. And he also has been a caddy for Tom Watson. I should just throw that out there as well. Well, we are going to close things with Paul's Dream from the Dune soundtrack by Hans Zimmer. Our thanks to Adam Staniszewski, who's very good at reading hand signals, and Debbie Bilder and Paige Murray Bessler, the producers of Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thank you so much for joining us.